Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. My guest today is Jerry Cahalan, who is the founder and CEO of ClickGiant, an internet marketing firm located in Charleston, South Carolina. Today, we're going to be discussing Jerry's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thanks so much for joining us today, Jerry.
No, thanks for having me, Julia.
Yeah, so to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Sure.
So what would you say really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur and agency owner?
The money is the main thing. I always need a little bit more. And I got into it I worked for an ad agency and I was in sales since pretty much out of school. Mm-hmm. And I knew I had a good feeling I'd be a decent salesperson. You know, I felt like I could understand features and benefits and how to address the issues that were important to companies. But I ended up more on the marketing side when I landed with an ad agency and was assigned with new business. And I went out and pitched their capabilities, and we got some good clients, but more and more I was in on the creative meetings and wanted to know more about what are we going to do now. And they would tell me, get back out on the road. And so I knew I wanted to be a little, sales, are important, right? And they fuel everything most of us do. And you have to have some kind of style of sales.
Yeah.
And pipeline and leads. And you mentioned, we'll talk about that at some point too in this pod is what's your style of getting, staying in front of leads and stuff.
Yep.
But sales will always be a part of it, but I want to then be able to, be in the picture throughout the entire project. I felt like at that time, if I start my own thing, I want to stay on the smaller side. I want to be part of these projects and build relationships. And so, the money thing is part of it. It's how can you make decent money? I say decent because I feel like I don't want to work 15 hours a day anymore. And there's a lot of opportunity to make more. But I wanted to work normal work weeks and not have employees that were worried about getting texts at 11 at night like I used to.
Yeah.
And so the money has to be right. But more importantly is, loving what you do and waking up with energy and trying to maintain some of that passion. And that does happen. I think if you stay in the game, with related to marketing and helping companies, you have to be energized by the challenge. And you get to know these people and I tell employees too, when I'm introducing them to a new client or they're coming on and they're new with us and they have a lot of questions. And one of the things we always point back to is, having empathy. And for me, it comes naturally. I worked with over the years, so many different clients, and it happens naturally. But for a lot of young ones who come into the industry, it does. I don't think it happens naturally. Is they don't think of themselves as, what if I were that owner, or what if I were in their shoes? What would I want? What would I need?
Right.
It just doesn't occur to them, or they don't have enough life experience yet. And
yeah.
So we talk about that, and And it's one of those things like where you, when you talk with your team, and you reinforce that, I want you to be creative. I want you to bring new ideas and be you and have, you know, the knowledge that no one's going to get upset with you if you know, if something didn't go completely according to plan, as long as you had the right intent, you know, that you had the client in mind, you were trying your best to do what was right for them. And so, yeah, I think you do end up passionate about these teams you work with and getting to these goals. And when you get the feedback from them, it's tremendous. I mean, it's, and it forms these, you know, relationships and you end up with clients that you have for much longer than a year, which is probably the industry standard. You know, it fluctuates obviously in the different subcategories of advertising and marketing, but
yeah,
you know, I always hear a year and, you know, the attrition and it's always going to happen. And we've been really lucky, or it's one of our designs that's worked, which is don't grow real fast. And, you mm-hmm. know, it keep who you have. I had an old sales manager that used to tell me that as it was a little contradictory, because as they were whipping you to get more sales than you had the month before, they would also remind you that, you know, keeping a client that you have is worth seven times a new one, because mm-hmm. it costs less to keep them. And so we'd always have a laugh about that in the meetings. But it is true. It is very true. And then those clients that you do keep for years rather than months, tend to be the ones that are advocates for you too. And yep. those referrals, you know, and I know we'll probably talk about that a little more later, is they're invaluable. I mean, and they also tend to be, for the most part, better clients too, because it's just something about the nature of somebody having recommended you, who uses you, and the relationship starts on a different plane than if they just click the PPC ad, you know, a Google ad.
Oh, it's so true. Yeah.
So, you know, that's, so anyway, I don't know. I rambled around a bit there, but I got into it because I wanted to be more on the marketing side versus just sales. Mm-hmm. And I'm still in it because of that, because I think it's a worthwhile thing to do. And all of these brands and companies we work with, they're connected to just a few real people. And some of these companies are as small as ours. And, yep. you know, people don't know that, but so that is cool. And yeah, I'm still in it, and it stays fresh. And I'll talk about that too, in a little while, if you'd like. The idea of, for me, of working with multiple industries and categories and keeping it fresh and not being too niche within marketing for me, and why that works.
So to get started, talk a little bit about, you know, how, you know, your story around starting ClickGiant, and, you know, maybe, you know, what was one challenge that you had to overcome along the way. And then, yeah, mm-hmm. we'll segue. And I'd love to talk about, you know, how you've grown the agency, and, you know, we'll talk about how your sales background, you know, played a role in your agency growth. And we'll go from there.
The sales background helps. And I talk to people now that they have maybe, you know, and no one knows who will be able to do it and who won't. You just don't know. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of things and desire, you know, when someone sets out and does something. But a lot of times they have, I listen to them and they have a lot of the parts, but they don't have that, you know, marketing/sales side. And so then typically that's okay. You need to hire someone who's good, who can do that. But if you know how to do that part, and you have the other ideas close, it helps, because you can go out and get leads. You know, you can get some leads and you can start to close some business. And it's not as hard as people think. You know, you look at the category you're in, and once you feel like you can offer similar or better service or products, you have to cut your price until someone says yes. You know, in a lot of categories, that's for free. You know, start out with friends and family, and photographers they'll do the first couple weddings for free.
Yes.
In order to have a portfolio.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's do what you have to do. And if you're good at it, it'll work. Then you'll have the portfolio and then you can say, all right, it's a couple more bucks. But so I was with that ad agency doing the new business, and little by little, I did get worked, got to be a little more creative and help strategize a little bit with the plan, but, you know, but it's showing my age a little bit now, but back then, there were two owners of this smallish agency in Charleston, and they had come up, and made their money on newspaper and radio and billboards and, a touch of TV, but really it's print, billboards, radio were the big driver. It's what they did. And,
right.
You know, there was a lot of money in that too. And, but a lot's changed, obviously. So this is probably 15, 16 years ago when I started getting, as I was prospecting and talking to companies about our services, I started hearing the same thing over and over again. First, it was the, can you design a new website for us? Which we, at the time, they didn't do. And we talked about that and they said, yeah, you're right. We better, you know, we're hearing it too. Let's get someone who's a good designer. So they got a few good designers and we started designing websites, and that was a cool new turn for that company. And the next phase was SEO. I still kind of remember the first time hearing that word and thinking, is that an acronym? What is that? Like probably scratching notes, like scratching it down on a pad.
Yeah.
In the office and saying SEO or CO, I have no idea what that is. And now that's the third company that said, do you do that? Do you offer that? We were just getting into website design. So I've learned more about it and then got obsessed at some point. I mean, you know, I think the beginning of it all was Google Ads, AdWords back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so neat because you know, it was brand new and there weren't a ton of people doing it, and you could teach yourself, you know, you get on and read everything Google has to say about it. And you say, oh yeah, let me just get in there and try it. And, it was amazing because I was able to, I talked the agency into letting me help with that sort of as my own little thing. It's like, oh, Jerry does that. He does a little of that. So yeah, why not? If it makes them happy or you can get them on because of PPC, then fine. So I would set up these, like take a lawyer, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a personal injury lawyer or something who they're used to spending more money than in other categories. And I would be able to get them clicks and actual, you know, leads for as little as 50 cents or 75 cents.
There's
no
incredible.
One else bidding at the time.
Yeah.
So I fell in love with the PPC, and then I read more about organic SEO, which is the, you know, it's a weird thing at that time to say, oh, all it means is you write stuff down on the website and then Google will take care of it. They'll rank you if you have the keyword a lot of times. So that was back in the early days of a lot of ugly websites with keyword stuffing. But I kind of just learned from the internet with that stuff. And then put it into practice, though. I had a lot of guinea pigs. You know, I had a lot of actual clients or small companies that asked my help and for my help. And I was able to experiment, and I got busy enough and I left the agency and started my thing. And
interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's it. It started with just myself. And I reached out to a few small companies, actually did bang on doors. I went down and knocked on doors.
Okay.
Go into a build, you know, a building. That's how old I am. Probably not as many doors as like my grandfather's knocked on as sales guys, but I literally showed up and I would walk into a law firm and I would say, you're going to want to hear this. I mean, I didn't really have a script, but I knew how powerful it was. And if I could just get their attention for 1 second, they'd say, all right, what is it that we need? And I'd say, is that computer on over there? Google this. And it would be number one. I'd say, I did that. See that website right there? I put them at number one. They already have, you know, 10 more accounts than they did last month. And they would say, well, what does this cost? And then when I told them it was such a low price, they would just say, oh, they would just literally hand me money right there. They'd just write a check or whatever.
That's
I would
so
say
cool.
Like, it's $300 a month. And they were like, that's it. to be number one for, you know, DUI lawyer in Charleston. I'm like, yep, you just, you know, give me 6 months, but $400 a month or whatever.
Yeah.
And I got real busy. And I remember saying on a pod a few years ago that at that time, I honestly thought that I was going to be like a billionaire. I thought I had like a magic power that no one knew about, and that it was just too easy, even though it was work and you had to go out and make the sales and you had to do the work and you had to know how to report to clients. And but I had been groomed for that stuff in my past sales and jobs, and especially with the ad agency, where you learn that at that age, I didn't even know how much I knew, but I had that, you know, when you're an entrepreneur and you start out by yourself, we talked about the sales side and the marketing knowledge is, okay, that's how you get people to look at you.
Yeah.
And then can you do this thing? Hopefully, yes. That's why you tried to start it. But the, how do you report to these clients that things are working and retain them? What do they need to see or hear to believe what you believe, which is you're having success, you know, that you're breaking through, that you're delivering more than enough value for what they're paying. And I had that too. And so I started, you know, over the years, the reports that you send out get better and better, and they should, and they can, mine could even be better now. I'm starting to see things that it's just need to be freshened up a little and visually tell the story quicker, because the clients don't have time to read through too much. But, you know, things like I know with you with reviews, you have really cool dashboards where it's visually, it's easy to see who just gave us a review. Can I respond to it here? What's my rate? You know, do we have 17 more reviews this month than we did last month? Just quick visual things. So I had the reporting side.
Yep.
And that was it. It started going, and you have to hire at some point, and that's a whole nother, chapter of what you learn with that, and then you learn a lot about yourself. What type of owner are you? What type of CEO? What type of leader or manager are you? And we're all a little different. I'm not a manager type. I didn't like being micromanaged. When I was a salesperson, I always felt like I do my work. I work hard. I'm good at it. I don't need someone trying to push me or scare me into selling more. And it must come from that. But so I like have a fear of micromanaging. I typically get someone to help me with that part if and when it's needed. It's not needed a lot with my teams, you know. Yeah, you do need someone, but not with my company. I don't need it really nearly as much as others. And one of the reasons is that I said it earlier. It was a conscious decision. I didn't want to get too big. I didn't want to, like a lot of people in marketing and who start companies like ours, they see the possibilities and they say, let's just keep ramping up as far as we can go, and we'll either be able to sell this, or we'll just be a millionaire, and we know it. We'll have many managers under, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. I just was a little bit older as mine got going. I was like in my 30s, and I had a baby just a couple of years before. And I just didn't, after, you know, the, when you build, obviously the first few years you work a lot. I did work 12, 13 hours a day, 6 days a week for probably 6-7 years straight. Wow. But it didn't feel like work. You know, it was, sometimes it was, you know, pour yourself a cocktail and then get back on the laptop. And before you knew it, you had, you know, done 2 more hours and put together the proposal so that you didn't have to get up at 4:30 in the morning. But it's yours, and every single, at that small stage too, every single thing you do results in another client or more money for you or more stability for your company. So it's not, it was a fun time too, but yeah. I didn't want to do that. And my strength isn't managing teams and knowing how to, extrapolate that out into, well, if you could have this success with ClickGiant here, imagine 50 more cities. I've been around companies that have done that. And I felt like for me, if I can get to this amount of income, that's a fair amount. And I'll feel I can do the things I want to do, but also turn it off at 6 o'clock or whatever. And not have people calling me on the weekend. So it's worked perfectly, in that respect. But yeah, so I don't know if you, hiring, I know, is another chapter. You mentioned, and I can talk more about that a little. Oh, I'm sorry. I said that with me, the micromanaging isn't as necessary because we have stayed small and grow slowly but surely. And one of the reasons is I wanted to be a part of the projects and not just, you know, have so many that you've never even met the clients and your team just handles it with your system. I am involved and all of, you know, I'm involved in every single project. So we have a nice, healthy email thread thing going on with every client all the time. I already know what's going on.
It's so important.
Yeah. Yeah, just stay tied in a little bit and yep. things won't go off the rails. Yeah. So we've kept those clients longer. Some of them since the very beginning, which is unreal, I know, but 13 years.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it's lucky. And I think we've been able to deliver just enough value, you know, and also some of them they still kind of pay close to what they did back then, which is a fraction of what other, you know, what a new company would pay for SEO and content marketing today.
Right. So, you know, talk a little bit about what it really takes to maintain those happy clients that are going to stay on for, you know, 13 years. Like, I know you've got the communication dialed in and they're, you know, it sounds like they're grandfathered in at a very reasonable price, but what else have you learned along the way that helps keep your clients really happy?
Well, there's probably a few things, and the reporting is one of them, but that's the least you can do, right? Is to have some kind of reporting system that if they were to read through the report or log on and look at their dashboard, that it did deliver actual information to them that was of value to them.
Right.
That's the least you can do. Having most of them, and as clients stay on months and then years, you'll have less of these calls or Zoom. Now it's Zoom where I share my screen and I'll walk through what I see. You'll have less of them, but you still have them. Mm-hmm. And we have probably with new clients, I usually am on one of those calls once every 2 months or so for the first year or so. And that is basically me walking this new client through the reporting that they already get. They get a PDF and they have a login where they can see the live dash, right? But they don't either know how to do it or they just don't do it. Mm-hmm. It's important to me, if you're going to keep a client long-term, that they do know all the good stuff that's happening. And that's something that as you get busier, it gets harder and harder to do. So again, it's back to that theme of how big do you want to get? Are you growing too fast? So you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Because just because you're not hearing from them doesn't mean everything's fine. They do not know the good things. I guarantee you. Other than if they're busy, you know, if their phone's ringing and they're super busy and they credit, you know, they give credit to you as part of that, that's great. But yes. Yeah, they don't know that they just got to number one for, you know, prescription assistance program, or the best insoles for soccer cleats. They don't know it. They're just busy doing their job. So you have to get it in front of them. And the next step from reporting would be to send a personal email out, which we do all the time we're bragging about what's going on and they want to know, they're paying for it. So that's just an email. And we don't have templates. I let everybody use their own style. Mm-hmm. And they see me throughout the 6 months or a year. And then the reps know I have a good feeling I know how Jerry does it at least, which is very casual and friendly, as if now they understand I am the owner. Right. I'm a CEO and clients do talk to me a little differently. A lot of time. And sometimes now I'm a little older than that. So mm-hmm. I have more experience in a lot of ways. So we talk more as peers. And even though they're paying us there, I have a little bit of a different relationship, but you don't have to be too template-y and by the book. You have to have a relationship at some point. Even if you're a 22-year-old rep, there is a personal relationship. So you know, the sending a quick email that says, hey, happy Friday, or, you know, I hope fishing went well. Just wanted you to know you're number one now for this. Have a great weekend. And that's it. That's an email they will read. And it goes a long way. So sharing what's going on with them. Yeah, I mean, that's just a quick email that it tells them you're on the job too, that yeah. you're thinking about them. You know, that's another thing. I'll talk about this, I think, just for a minute, because you talked about, okay, so you get your business rolling and you hire some people and it's growing. What are some of the challenges you face, right? What were some hurdles?
Yep.
All right. This is a good segue. So, and it ties back into how do you keep clients and how do you make sure that they're tuned into what's working and what's going well? So the biggest hurdle for us was 3 or 4 years in, Google had that first big update, the Panda, I think it is, the first algorithm update that mainly dealt with eradicating a lot of ugly websites from ranking at the top of page one for mostly spammy backlinks, right? So they were buying backlinks or creating their own farms of websites and linking back and forth. And these backlinks back then had a lot of power, and they could get you to number one just for having a couple hundred links that had anchor text that said personal injury lawyer, Kansas City, right? You would get to number one. We even did a little bit of it. But it was never a huge part of what we did. It was, we were supplementing and trying, we were always trying new things and methods. And I did see a couple sites shoot up to the top after getting a certain amount of links, and it, that was all we were doing to the website. And if you, as an SEO company, who now is more of a content marketing company, you would much rather have clients pay less and you do a lot less and the margins are higher, right? You'd rather just go, oh yeah, it's only $600 a month or whatever that threshold is before clients go, wow, this is a lot of money, you know, that we're spending monthly. If you could keep it there and just pay someone $150 a month to build backlinks and you're making $400 or $500 and everybody wins, that's what you'd want. Mm-hmm. But when that update came, it penalized sites that had whatever Google deemed a spammy backlinks at that time. And people, many, many websites in many industries were knocked off page one overnight. They were just gone and they were stuck. We called it like in limbo. You knew without using any tools back then, you could tell who had that penalty. Mm-hmm. Because anytime you put the exact title tags from their website into a search, they would be on like page 13. You know, Google just pushed them way back. And so a new era began. So I had a lot of panic attacks at night back then. I had a trouble sleeping. I thought, I think at the time we had maybe like 20 clients, and they were all, or almost all, really good brands, good companies, you know, mostly local at that time in Charleston.
Okay.
And, you know, and they, if they had been penalized by something we did, it would have been really tough. I mean, I don't know what, I guess you lose the client immediately. Mm-hmm. Without question, because now you've not only are they not getting value for what, you know, their monthly payment is, but you've hurt them. They're even worse off than they were before.
Yeah.
And we didn't even know about what could you do? Could you disavow? Could you have these links removed? We probably would have built a new, we'd get them a new domain, built them a brand new website free of charge, and then started over again the right way. But I would have done whatever was necessary. But thank God we only had one or two that dropped a little bit. The vast majority, we didn't feel it. But that was a huge wake-up call for me, because the idea that you could lose overnight, literally overnight, lose everything you've worked for 4 or 5 years.
It's terrifying.
Just be out of business. Yeah. So, and also the other thing I thought was not just the backlink or so that's one element of what you might do to help a client get, you know, be more visible. But I was a little more weary of Google and placing all of your eggs in the Google basket, you know, kind of riding along with, and there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of us have made a lot of money because of Google. And now we're seeing it with Amazon. There's a lot of people making tons of money because of what Amazon is. But I just felt like we need to diversify. Mm-hmm. We need to have some more things we do And then never do anything black hat or even gray. Just buy the books. Let's do everything. I'd rather have less clients and have them be real brands that we, you know, that stay with us. And we say, look, we're not doing any tricky stuff here. We're going to do everything that we can that a good brand would do to be more visible online. But so right away, almost right away, we put more emphasis into instead of just what are your rankings, how can we improve the website? So we got more into web design, writing much more high-end, unique, conversion-worthy type copy for the websites.
Mm-hmm.
So stuff I already knew how to do. And I never would have done it if I didn't have to. If, like I said, if I could have just made $600 a month times 50,000 clients for being number one in every city, then that's what I would do. But we decided, let's take it up and add a few things that we're really good at. And then, you know, if SEO changes or Google keeps throwing these hurdles up, they're doing it for everybody then, right?
Yes.
It'll be hard for everybody. So, and then I talked myself into this. It felt like talking myself. Now I completely believe it. But back then I had the team. It was like three of us. And I said, here's the thing. If something weird happens again, we don't need to panic. The client needs us more than ever. We need to be the experts on these things, right? Let's learn more about Google and these updates and this algorithm and how it works, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. What would you do if this happened? And then, so we all sort of embraced that. And then it turned out to be pretty, pretty accurate that, you know, the next thing we found out was people are starting to reach out and ask us, we were hurt by this last one. Can you help? So we actually ended up with more clients after that because they left the agencies they were with, which really weren't agencies. They were just small shops that were trying to buy links. Mm-hmm. And they came and found firms that actually could help and they could trust. So we added clients and we got into from after the doing all the copy on the websites, we got into blogs. And we thought back then we were hearing, well, this was the common, not the wisdom you would hear is, oh, you do a blog because Google, they like to see that you did something, you know, you published something new, right? You staying relevant or whatever that was. And we're like, yeah, all right. And so we introduced it and clients were like, oh yeah, I would. And some were asking for that anyway. Could you do blogs? I'm supposed to be doing one a week, they say, but I can't do it. Mm-hmm. So we took them over. And so the first thing I noticed was, there's a few things. One was we could tell it was going to help organic SEO much slower than buying backlinks, but we could see it that if we had a couple of blogs that got ranked well and we got more traffic, we started to rank a little higher for other things. We could just see that there was a little more authority there. Not to mention we got the traffic for the articles we did. So we were more SEO-ish with our blogs. It wasn't just like an update for the sake of it. It was really long tail keyword focused. So
right.
It would be like, you know, it was just connecting geo, like connecting towns to things that didn't make a lot of sense at the time, but it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Like for lawyers, I did, they told me after car accidents, truck accidents are the most lucrative thing because it's usually a big company that owns those trucks, right? These 18 wheelers. When a truck hits a car, it's a big time settlement, right? It's a big time thing. So PI lawyers love it.
Right.
And we looked at the searches and I came to them with this idea. What if we, instead of just a blog, we do a page for every town in South Carolina. And they wanted the small towns because they said those juries award the most, you know, these small towns in the middle of your state, they want to sock it to the big, you know, the Walmarts and everything. So every town I did, like Dylan, like truck accident lawyer Dylan SC, right? We did hundreds and we were number one for every single town. And for one of these lawyers, they're still ranked. I checked 9 years later, they're still ranked. Like they'll be somewhere on that page for truck accident lawyer. So we got into that kind of stuff. And we saw improvements and clients were happy. The next wave is this is another great thing for, I think, entrepreneurs or small businesses is try to take a breath and embrace what the clients are saying to you and think creatively about how that might be a positive thing instead of your first instinct, which is frustration and fear, which is they're now complaining about something or they're fixated on something that they should not be. And that thing,
like, ask for that feedback from your clients so that you can be improving your work.
I'm sure you could ask. And a lot of companies are into that. To be honest, I draw the line. I don't like to open up the Pandora's box of things. Like, I'm not going to call a client and say, hey, tell me what else, what could we be better at? Because you never know what you're going to open up. I feel like we work hard enough as it is to deliver, but when they give you feedback, we're always busy, right? We're stressed as owners. We're busy doing the work and managing and the stress of trying to keep clients. And then you'll get this feedback from a client that seems negative. So for me, that was, we started, the more clients we brought on, the more blogs we then were responsible for, right? Let's just say it's at a minimum 1 week. So you have one a week per client, then we get up to maybe 50 clients. So now there's 50 blogs that have to be published every week. And there's three or four of us in the office, you know?
Yeah.
And this was a little bit before, a lot before, really, in terms of a few years before freelancers could be completely trusted in platforms like Upwork and that kind of thing.
Right.
There was some of that around, but I don't think we did a whole lot of it back then. So I would get kids either still in college or right out of college who were sharp English majors and great writers. And they were smart enough they could be shown how to do a little research and say, oh, I get it. I understand what this type of business does. I found similar articles online. I crafted mine to be completely unique, but they got it. But it was a lot of work. So sometimes we would lose a writer or just get really backed up. And I started getting emails about, where's my blog? I thought you guys were on the ball over there or whatever. And I was frustrated and I fought back. I fired back at clients. Way more than I should have. I'm lucky to have kept as many as I did because I was annoyed by it. And my response to them who would complain that their blog was one day late or it came Monday of the next week instead of the week before, my feeling was that, first of all, Mr. Client, the only reason you have blogs is I told you I wanted to do blogs for you. I told you if I do these blogs, it'll help do what I want to do. But don't forget, you're paying me for good rankings. You're not paying me for blogs. Google could change their mind next month and blogs might be out. You're paying for rankings and look what happened this last month. That's what I want you to focus on, right? Don't, you know, you're fixating on one blog. It doesn't matter if I post four in one day or one every 6 days, according to the calendar. We're going to get to a finish line, right? So I fired back like that all the time. I would get annoyed and say, just trust me. It doesn't matter if we do two blogs next week. We're going to get this all done and you're going to have better rankings and leads, right? Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't stop. They would not stop. They were fixated. I even had one person, one client quit at some point because they said for the third time, my blog didn't come that week. It came the day, you know, it was like 3 days later. And they said, we've lost faith in you. And I was like, this is unreal. This is unreal. They will not listen to me. I'm telling you, this is just some tool I'm using to get to the result you want, right? Mm-hmm. And the results are there. But at some point, finally, I don't know if it was 6 months or a year, it dawned on me, this might be a positive thing. So many of them love the fact and are comforted by the fact that they see that blog get posted and it gets published. And the best guess I had at the time was that it lets them know you're working, that you're doing something, that there's an effort going on and that their money is being well spent, right? It was something they can see. They were sure of it because we would always get their approval to publish. And that's what occurred to me was, okay, if that's what they want, that's what we'll give them. That's what we will be great at. Making sure that these things are published when we say they're going to be published, that they're well written, that they can be proud of them, that we'll mix in, SEO is always the goal with us, but if a, as the my team is always known, and I've say to the clients right in front of the employees as they come on, you're the boss. I mean, you're paying. So at the end of the day, if you say, hey, I need help with this kind of content, or we need to help with a press release, or we opened up another location, we'll just pause those blogs and jump over and do whatever you need us to do, right? Or write about whatever you want us to, and then we'll get back to the SEO stuff. And they've always loved that. So from that, the content marketing portion of ClickGiant was really born, because it came from that them nagging us that a blog should be on this day every week.
Yeah.
To us realizing the power of content driven SEO. So we got so good at it. We started seeing the rankings improve, and we started seeing these blogs that would just, say the right things at the right time to Google, these types of blogs. You have one, the 13 tips for optimizing your local profiles. I mean, you don't know which ones are going to hit and work.
Yeah.
You do one like that, and all of a sudden you're like, this thing ranks nationally. This is ranked fourth nationally for these terms, and we get 5,000 visits a month. So we started seeing that, and ClickGiant then, took that next turn into, we'd rather be more of a high-end quality content marketing company than SEO only focused. So yeah, that was a big hurdle that turned into something good.
Interesting. So yeah, it's really interesting to hear about, that evolution of, you've uncovered pain points along the way, and it's really helped you to grow the agency into what you guys are now. So we have about 10 minutes left. So I'd love to know, just quickly, where do you see ClickGiant in 5 years' time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I hope it's very similar. I would like to have really about the same amount of clients, because there's always a little attrition. There always is. People sell company. We just have one of those, and I was so happy for him. A client for 4 or 5 years sold his company, which maybe one day ClickGiant will sell. Believe it or not, they're buying marketing. I never thought people would get to the point where they're investing in marketing firms. It seems a little weird to me. We have such a personal connection to our clients, but they are. So maybe that will happen if I can hand off. If I did ever go that route, that I'd want one of those deals where I still was involved in the company and plugged into it. But I think the same size would be great. I think we're around 80 clients, and it's manageable for me to still be a part of those projects and know everything that's going on. And then if you can get your team, the right type of team, and not overhire, you all make really decent livings and like what you're doing. And so, yeah, I think about the same would be good.
Awesome. Well, we're going to be now moving on to the fast five. So I have 5 rapid fire questions for you. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
I think, in terms of the relating it back to business, I don't read as many business related books as I did when I started the company.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do hear, and I hear people say this on pods sometimes, is you need to get back in there once in a while. Don't stop learning and being inspired. And I use pods more for that, to be honest, the
right.
Inspiration part. But a book my brother gave me a few years ago at Christmas was the John Wooden Wizard of Westwood. He was the coach of UCLA, and they won 10 championships in 12 years in basketball. It'll never be done again. And he had he's like amazing in terms of talking about leadership. And he built this, he calls it the pyramid of success. This guy was a school teacher who took it to the highest level of competition. And in the book, you just get these insights that are such good reminders about what do you focus on in terms of being a leader. And he had really funny things, like he would always be on his athletes about how they tied their sneakers. And these athletes You know, Bill Walton, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, these are Hall of Fame NBA basketball players. Those were his players. And he was telling them they weren't tying their sneakers the right way. I mean, the guy was involved in every aspect of those championship teams. You know, and he talks about be intense, but not emotional. Right. And that helped him with players, and it does with your employees too, of course. So that, I think that book had tons of little insights.
Very good. And what does your morning routine look like?
I yoga first, then I run 5 miles, read a chapter of a new book. I tend to the garden, and then I do an infrared sauna, then a cold tub, and then I get to work.
I love that morning routine.
isn't that like a typical CEO?
I was going to say, wow, that's intense.
Every time I see some CEO, it's something like that. Like, I fast for 2 weeks. I'm really coffee and emails. I have
you
some
just
coffee.
Get straight to it.
I get right in there. But for those of you who aren't also running and being connected in the projects and talking to clients, if you're part of the team, I would not suggest starting with emails. You know, as you're fresh and inspired, you should tackle that big project first. And then there's always time to go look at the emails. But as the owner, I like to make sure if a client has a question that came in late, I want to know it.
Yeah, for sure. It's nice to have that element of having a little bit of, you know, me time in the morning, you know, have that exercise or however you clear your mind. But you definitely got to do what you got to do when you own the company, for sure.
Yeah. Well, Wordle, sometimes I'll do a Wordle with my coffee before I get going just to get the brain going.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Is there a CEO that you follow or study?
No, not a particular one, but like everybody else, I've gotten into a lot of the pods where you get to hear these people talk, and I'm just looking for, like everyone else, little insights, but little inspirational stories that reinvigorate you, and remind you why you got into it and the greatness that comes out of good stories and success. And, like a pod that's good for that is the How I Built This, you know, on NPR.
Yeah, I love that podcast.
It's amazing, you know, and you can do that while you're on on the Peloton. Or Peloton was one of them, actually. The Peloton story is really cool. So yeah, I like to hear little stories from all of them.
Love it. And what is your favorite online tool?
Probably SEMrush for, you know, and I use it often too, just about every day I'm on there checking some website. But it for us, you know, if rankings and traffic to clients' websites, if that's one of the bigger goals, you know, that tool allows you to actually look under the hood of really any website, and you can see how much traffic they get. And what keywords are triggering that traffic? You know, where are they ranked for that? And to have that kind of knowledge that, man, if we could get to number 5 for that, that's, you know, almost 2,000 visits a month to the website. So yeah, that's a tool I use all the time.
Awesome. Such a powerful tool. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
This came up recently on a phone call with an old friend. I'm going to say, I wish I knew how much money you could make just being a real estate agent, because I would have been great at that. And they make so much money. It's crazy. I did just hear an ad that a new broker somewhere, and they were saying, you know, we only take this much commission. So clearly it's changing a little, like as more new brands come on and who knows, with Zillow and Trulia and those, they probably will, like, you could just have Zillow, you could buy your house and they'll just send it to you, just like, you know, Carvana or something. But historically, they have had a good run, those people. They get like a check for 40 grand every time they sell a house. And I have some friends who pay way more in taxes than I've ever could dream of making. So yeah, if I did it again, I probably would go into like international real estate.
Interesting. Like okay. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Jerry. It was a real pleasure to learn about your story and how you've grown ClickGiant. So thank you again for joining me for today's show.
Thanks so much for having me, Julia. It was fun.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.